Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're celebrating those brave pioneers who've struck out on their own, hung out their own shingle, and are making a go of it as a Connecticut entrepreneur. We're going to ring up the founder of the Connecticut Entrepreneur Awards and find out all about how you can get involved supporting these local enterprisers by voting in this year's competition through April 2nd, and then attending their virtual awards ceremony in mid-April. Then we'll circle back with Ableis, which has just expanded its involvement with the Life Skills Employment Advocacy and Partnership, or LEAP, program, which is poised to help young adults with special needs throughout Lower Fairfield County and now in the Norwalk area experience a seamless transition to adult life. And we're going to close hearing from the director of the Connecticut-based Food Share Institute for Hunger Research and Solutions. Whether you're a casual donor to a local food drive, you volunteer or help run a local pantry, or you use one, our chat today is going to focus on a new publication that can help your local food provider and food bank or food pantry address social inequity and food insecurity. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Imagine the emotional and financial burdens facing a family with a child diagnosed with cancer, and then imagine making a positive difference to that family by participating in the Circle of Care Virtual 5K. The second virtual fundraiser in as many years is back, and it takes place over the weekend of May 1st and 2nd. And the best part is you can complete your 3.1 miles your way, anywhere, any place. Be part of the team meeting Circle of Care's fundraising goal of $100,000 to be able to provide the level of support these families with children facing cancer diagnoses need. Get all the details and register now by heading to thecircleofcare.org. So this morning we're going to start out celebrating those brave folks who hang out their own shingle, who strike out on their own to make it big. And we know here in Connecticut that companies from Bigelow Tea on up to some of the other huge global corporate entities have been started out with the one entrepreneur's great idea. And so today we are celebrating entrepreneurism here in Connecticut with the coordinator of the Connecticut Entrepreneur Awards. These awards identify, recognize, and celebrate Connecticut's leading entrepreneurs, ventures, and ecosystem elements that support them. And we're looking to you to cast your votes for the huge and respectable number of those who qualified for this year's Connecticut Entrepreneur Awards. And we're pleased to make the acquaintance of Bill Kenny. Bill, thanks for joining us this morning. I'll tell you, it was just quite impressive clicking through each of the subcategories to see the sheer numbers, despite the few who felt that they qualified in virtually every category, whose faces became very familiar after a few clicks. There is a really unique and special bunch of people out there, and I'm so glad we're able to talk about it this morning. But let's roll it back. This award is actually part of the Connecticut Entrepreneur Event Organizers Consortium. So let's start there. Tell me all about that.
Yeah, so thank you, John. It's great to be with you. So yeah, about 6 years ago, we developed essentially a consortium of all the organizations in Connecticut that are running entrepreneur-related events. And, it's kind of funny as you start down that road, you really don't know what you don't know. And through the process, we've sort of unearthed just programs and opportunities that we had no idea were going on. And so this sort of consortium of organizations over the years has come together, and we're now at it 5 years in terms of these entrepreneur awards. But we've come together to do a variety of things. We have besides the entrepreneur awards, we've also have created a statewide calendar of entrepreneur facing events and, just a variety of other types of things that support the entrepreneur community. And it's all done just as a, on a volunteer basis. So it's a really kind of a neat group.
Mm-hmm. Now, all volunteer, if I understand correctly, right?
Yeah, all volunteer. Yeah, we're not even a nonprofit. We're that immature.
Well, I should ask then, are most of the folks or all of the folks virtually who are kind of coming around to lead this effort entrepreneurs in and of themselves?
Yeah, it's a great question. More than half. So I would say, you know, certainly the founding team were 100% entrepreneurs. And now sort of our organizing group is probably, you know, 60%, I'd say, active entrepreneurs with going ventures. And the balance are people who are in the ecosystem. They're somehow associated with programs or institutions that are somehow running entrepreneur programming.
Hmm. So do I understand correctly that aside from the process of qualifying and identifying this year's award nominees or self-nominees, that the other work that you're doing and the growth in the organization that you're hoping to promote in the future is welcoming others to come to the table and be part of the consortium as volunteers themselves, or is that kind of like a closed circle right now, and essentially you're just all focusing on the award situation?
Oh, we are 100% open. This is a big open tent, and we very much encourage participation and from every corner of the state, every every part of the ecosystem or want to be in the ecosystem. I want to be super, super inclusive. So please, anyone that's interested, feel free to reach out.
Very good. I also see there's a request for sponsorship. Is that for the awards themselves, or do you guys do other events that also can provide opportunities for sponsors to get their brands out there in front of all these independent thinking business people?
It's primarily the awards, the awards at this point have become almost a sort of an annual platform. Mm-hmm. Because we're, you know, as soon as we finish this event, we'll be beginning to promote the opening of the nominations for the 2022 awards, which, those nominations formally open on December 1, 2021, a little later this year, but, it's only a few months, from when the actual celebration happens to when we're, collecting nominations for the next class. So it's pretty quick.
Great. Well, let's just jump in the time machine and ratchet it back just a few years to when this whole thing started. Tell me about the inception of the first raft of awards and how the program has kind of mushroomed over the years.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to. So, it was really interesting. The sort of what we were observing, a few of us got together over a cold beverage of some kind, and we're chatting about what we were seeing in the ecosystem, and really what we were seeing in very healthy and thriving ecosystems. Whether you go to Boston or Silicon Valley or whatnot, where they're somewhat a few years ahead in terms of what the entrepreneur community is like in terms of maturity. And, one of the things that is a part of those rich ecosystems are, besides the mentoring and the programs and so on, is also both celebration and ways to bring the community together, that not just, various industry verticals, but the entire community, because of the cross-pollinization opportunities that can happen when you get scientists together with, people who are more customer facing, and people that are in Main Street businesses meeting the people that have global businesses, mm-hmm. and just all that, all those types of cool things. So that was really kind of how we started, and the first year our celebration was at the brewery. So it was just, it was perfect. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, a little intimate
space
thing,
for us. And, it was a lot of fun. And we continue to grow. We weren't able to have them in person last year, obviously, but the year before that we were at the ballpark in Hartford, which was just a blast. And, you know, the winners' names all went on the Jumbotron. Yeah. So it was just a great photo op for sure.
Yep.
You know, I think as we've grown, you know, I think something like this starts with sort of whatever network you have and whatever network your community has. And, you know, I think one of the things I think all of us are most proud of, and we're not done yet, but we've, you know, continued to expand that network. And now we, you know, in the first year we had sort of participation from every county in the state. And now we're really almost covering every state in terms of where we're getting, or I'm sorry, every city and town,
sure,
in terms of where we're getting nominations from. So, you know, continuing to reach, you know, sort of a more diverse audience. And that's really the goal. It's, you know, we want to, you know, if you kind of distill this whole thing, it's, I mean, as a state, as a community, we've got a certain amount of potential energy. And we see it as part of sort of our mandate is to really try to help the, you know, us collectively realize the, you know, all of the potential energy and, you know, sort of help people become financially independent and really, you know, sort of look at that opportunity to get everybody off the bench, if you will.
So the inevitable question about how all these brave business adventurers are faring in the COVID era needs to be asked. What are you hearing from your constituents and members and affiliates regarding how they're doing? Is the sand running out of the hourglass, or sadly, has it run out of the hourglass for many of them over the past year?
You know, it was a very strong year for nominations, and we have a kind of a record number of finalists. And so, you know, clearly there are certain business categories that are really challenged right now. Hospitality, restaurants, you know, those types of businesses. On the other hand, there are businesses, and many of which, that are having and have had record years. So, you know, I think it really depends on which industry verticals you're looking at. And Connecticut I think we're fortunate here in that we have a very diverse economy. So, you know, it's probably one of the big benefits. But yeah, I would say it's a mixed answer. It's not
I would also venture to guess that a lot of people who may have been striking out and expanding into space, you know, rental or lease space, office space, storefronts and things, have retreated back to maybe the garage or the spare room or even a closet in their house, and they're running things a little bit closer to home.
Yeah, I think, you know, most of our businesses probably this year has been a way to also find some new efficiencies, some ways to operate.
Yes. Great.
Yeah, right, whether it's from home or whatever the case may be, but
great.
Yeah, certainly there's less travel as a minimum.
Yes. So on your website, ctentrepreneurawards.com. You are offering tickets as well as the opportunity for people to peruse through these dozens and dozens of qualified finalists and cast their award votes. Tell me about the main event this year.
Yeah, so the main event's going to be a virtual event on April 19th. In the afternoon, we've got actually a whole bunch of, think of it almost like an expo. Many of the finalists will be exhibiting.
Yeah.
There'll be a bunch of roundtables with some of our past winners sharing a variety of insights. So we'll have three different categories of content. We'll have the community builders, and we'll also have ventures, so people that are leading companies. And then we'll actually have entrepreneurs themselves in a series of panel discussions. And these will, or you should even say roundtables, but they'll be talking about a variety of topics that'll be interesting for the audience. And then we kind of transition to a bit of networking from there and then into the awards event, which will start, I think it's right around 6 p.m. So yeah, it's a good, good fun schedule. And of course, after the awards at 8, there's an after party, which a virtual after party, if you haven't been to one, they're pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about driving home, which is always good.
And last but certainly not least, actually foremost, is the many qualified finalists and how people can cast their votes. In the last few minutes that we have with you, Bill, tell us, can you vote for everyone every day? Is it one of those things? How's the website set up to qualify the winners? Because there is just a real relatively short amount of time for people left to cast votes, right?
Yeah, so April 2nd is the deadline. And so we're 10 categories of different types of individuals and organizations that can be voted on. It's entrepreneur, venture, community builder, space, program funding, economic development, event, education, and then corporate and institutional. And within entrepreneur, as an example, there are entrepreneurs that are students, there are entrepreneurs that are Main Street, there are entrepreneurs that are in scaling businesses and scalable businesses, and also in social good type businesses. So there's a fair amount of diversity. And so, yeah, you simply go to the website, ctentrepreneurawards.com, and click on the vote navigation button at the top of the menu. And you'll just go and navigate to the categories you're most interested in, and of course, the people or organizations as well. And so in terms of the rules, you can vote one time for every or any candidate that you want. So so that's one time total per per finalist. So if there are 20 finalists in a category, you can vote 20 times.
One vote per entry per finalist.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep. That's perfect.
Excellent. So we really appreciate you coming in and giving us a nice orientation into this year's Connecticut Entrepreneur Awards. This initiative identifies, recognizes, and celebrates Connecticut's leading entrepreneurs, ventures, and ecosystem elements that support them. The Entrepreneur Awards are a product of the Connecticut Entrepreneur Event Organizers Consortium, one of the number of initiatives our guest, Bill Kenny, has discovered and developed over his years as an entrepreneur. We invite you to join and stay tuned, as soon they will begin their planning for their 2022 awards. And certainly all you need to do is go to ctentrepreneurawards.com or search Connecticut Entrepreneur Awards on your favorite search engine. And when you get to the page, click on the ticket button and consider supporting this organization by attending the awards event coming up in April, as well as going in and casting your votes for some of the entrepreneurs that you resonate with as you search through these dozens and dozens of brilliant business pioneers who have had the strength and wherewithal to set out on their own and identify themselves as Connecticut's more attractive entrepreneurs this year. Bill, we appreciate you for doing this, and thank you for taking some time this morning. Great to meet you, and we'll see you again in 2022. Good luck with the awards and the event. Well, as promised, we are circling back with our friends at Ableists and their CEO and president, Amy Montemuro. Last we spoke, we were talking about Sib Shops, this fantastic new initiative that the organization formulated to help siblings of young people with special needs and developmental disabilities. We'll talk a little bit about that and how that's going. But more imminently, the exciting news is the development of Life Skills Employment Advocacy and Partnership, LEAP, an organization that we featured here on the award-winning For the People a couple of times before in other areas. ABLIS, this nonprofit organization providing services and support to more than 800 individuals with special needs and their families, opened a new ABLIS LEAP program through the First Congregational Church in Norwalk. And we're going to also be hearing all about how that program is going to be helping young adults as well, especially those with special needs in the Norwalk area, experience a seamless transition into adult life. So beyond that, I'm going to leave it up to my guests to fill in the blanks. Amy, welcome to the program once again, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Well, just for those who don't know us, ABLIS is a nonprofit organization serving, as you said, over 800 individuals with their families throughout the lifespan. We have an early intervention, our therapy center, skilled therapists who work with young children and their families throughout their lives. ABLIS has continued to expand our services through the years. And we help individuals through their education, through the schools. We provide activities, recreation for friendships and fun, employment supports, and ultimately resulting in residential services for currently 152 individuals throughout our community. Mm-hmm. And most recently, we're really excited about our expansion into Norwalk. Our LEAP program is currently supporting 77 young adults. We started in 2007 in a Greenwich site at First Presbyterian Church, and we wanted to change the way we were providing services and have everything be in the community. So all the learning and growing and self-awareness and accessing your community, everything is done right with our community partners. And we continued to see how incredible the program was, and the different communities were reaching out to us to include other people that they wanted us to support. And we really felt that people should be able to learn and grow in the communities in which they live and they're connected to, which really resulted in our growth and expansion. So when the Westport schools came to us, we first opened up in Westport, and then we had a similar experience in Stamford, providing really incredible community supports to young adults. We're in Wilton, Richfield, and most recently, we're so excited to open to the Norwalk community as well.
Fantastic. Well, we'll come back and talk in depth about LEAP and, you know, kind of give folks the backstory and the details and whether or not they might be able to get a young person that they care about involved in one of the communities that this program is serving now. But in the meantime, let's flash back to our last visit. Sib Shops, at the time, it was really starting to gain traction. Is that an initiative that, you know, has run its course, or is it still going well?
Yeah, it's still going well. We started with three. I think we're up to 14 young adults now. And it's really such an incredible opportunity for siblings of people with disabilities to have their own support network, to talk about things that are great and not so great. We're going to continue to expand that and probably have different age groups so that individuals, you know, the peers can really be with their own peers of similar age and interests. Our next session is March 24th, and we are absolutely open to having more young adults join us.
Great. So for folks that may have not remembered or did not tune in for our last visit, in a nutshell, you know, this is really just kind of a way to remove the parents and main influencers from the picture for a few minutes or for a period of time and really be able to get the siblings to explore various types of ways to get along better with their special needs or disabled sibling, right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, to know that you're not alone, siblings of young adults and children with disabilities tend to be overlooked. And, you know, the families tend to focus on the child that's, you know, has the greatest need. So our social workers really are facilitating these fun activities and sessions where these, you know, kids can really talk and support each other and exactly in a safe environment where nobody knows how they're feeling, what they're saying, and it's a nice outlet for them.
Very good. So people can just go to ableis.us, that's ABILIS.US, and look for the Sib Shops program to get registered, and then they can maybe get in on the March 24th, you said, new session?
Yep. Excellent. That would be great.
Very good. Another thing that's really exciting is within a few days of our broadcast here in March, we are going to see a lifting of a lot of restrictions happening in Connecticut with the goal of, fingers crossed, moving toward a lot more opportunities and business openings and activities and, you know, people safely continuing to get together in public venues. And that's going to mean more jobs opening up, which really creates a great opportunity for those who may be on Social Security disability income to take advantage of the ableist ticket to work program. This is another really exciting program that you guys offer, that and it's something we really talk about a lot here on the show. Give us the short story on Ticket to Work.
Sure. Well, Ticket to Work is actually funded by the Social Security Administration, and ableist became a provider in 2018 so that when we get calls from families that are struggling with their loved one to help them find just a job, they may need social skills supports or additional job training. We are now a provider to help them with those needs, so they can log right on to our website. On Ticket to Work, and they can complete the application, and they will receive a call within 24 hours from one of our staff.
And that's in addition to career support and internships that you guys also facilitate, right?
It is. It is. We are normally, you know, people look at ableist and they think of just supporting individuals with intellectual disabilities, and that really with the IQ that falls below 70. And we really expanded our services to meet this, the needs of the gaps in our system for those who don't qualify for DDS, which is the Department of Developmental Services funding for, you know, additional day supports. We really want to make sure that we have answers for anybody that calls us.
Right. And of course, like many nonprofits, or probably virtually all nonprofits over this past year, ableist always welcomes support. And that's why before we take a quick break and come back and really dive into talking about the LEAP program, I want to remind people about Adopt a Home. Tell us about that one.
So many of our homes, individuals who don't have families necessarily, our organization has, of course, become their family. But we have an Adopt-a-Home program so that, well, it's to get really connect with our community, have people get to know the residents in their community. We love when neighbors are hearing about it and wanting to be a part of a home that we have in their own neighborhood. So really helping out another eye on different things that the home needs, or, you know, renovation recommendations or replacements of different, you know, things that somebody may see. But it's so such a great opportunity for our community to get to know the residents and really be a part of our community.
Fantastic. Neighbors, helping neighbors, and the only way you can really do that to the best effect is to get to know them. And that's what you guys are trying to do through this program, which is fantastic. Amy Montemurro is CEO and president of ableist, which is providing early intervention and customized therapy, as well as family education and advocacy to help individuals achieve important developmental milestones through therapeutic and family services programs. Their website is ableist, ABILIS.US. Stick with us. We're going to come back and talk about this brand new program that we've been hearing so much about. Yes, the LEAP program. We'll be back with Amy in just a few moments. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Well, if you consider yourself a man or woman of the soil, you like to get your hands dirty, or you've imagined yourself being involved in Connecticut agriculture, Connecticut's forming a working group with the goal of increasing diversity, racial equity, and inclusion within the state's agriculture industry. It's going to be administered by the Connecticut Department of Agriculture. The Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in Connecticut Agriculture Working Group is going to focus on engaging and supporting current and future farmers and those in the industry who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Working groups will meet monthly or as determined as necessary for approximately a year and a half. And the Department of Agriculture is inviting Connecticut farmers, service providers, nonprofits, educators, and others to participate in the working group. Nominations must be submitted to the agency by April 4th, however, and you can get those nominations by visiting the Department of Agriculture's web portal at ct.gov/DOAG. Then you need to click on the tab for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Working Group. We're back. Thanks for coming back. Amy Montemuro is here. She is with Ableis. As we said earlier in the program, they are just launching a new Ableis LEAP initiative. LEAP stands for Life Skills, Employment, Advocacy, and Partnership. We talked a little bit already about how Ableis is such a fantastic supporter of the development of life skills and employment opportunities. Amy, tell us how you came to develop the LEAP program at your agency.
Sure. Well, in 2007, we wanted to change the way we were providing services and be completely community-based. We wanted to really develop a soft landing for individuals who may not be necessarily ready to be competitively employed. They may not know what they want to do, and they need more time for personal growth, self-awareness. So we created this framework of liberal learning and community participation with our partners right in the community. And we started with the Greenwich location. We started with three people in 2007. It quickly grew to 25. And, you know, because the community was reaching out to us in all these different towns, we really felt strong that individuals should be supported in the communities in which they live, where they have connections, friends, and family, and where they want to be. So we really started with the Westport community when the school district asked us to create something for them like we were doing in Greenwich in their community. And it quickly, over 3 years, expanded to Stamford. We're actually looking for our second site because it's expanded so much. The Wilton community, the Ridgefield community, and now we're in Norwalk. We really have developed a really nice relationship with the school district and their transition program, and we want to be able to help provide that soft landing using community supports to help these young adults.
And you guys are making quite an investment. When you look across lean and efficient organizations that do so much like Ableis does, there's not always nobody ever sitting around with time on their hands, but you guys have taken made the investment of staff to support this program, and it shows based on the escalation of participants. I see Luis Velasquez is one of the key people to contact if folks want to learn more about LEAP. But tell us about the staff people who are engaging with newcomers to the LEAP initiative.
They're really incredible. Our staff are trained in providing an individualized plan to really identify, you know, what the hopes and dreams are of the individuals and their families for the future. So we can use the different some volunteer sites to develop skills and kind of find your niche and what you enjoy doing. It's really been all about the partnerships we've developed, whether it's the local Y or the food banks or Starbucks or the grocery stores to allow us to come in, volunteer in their sites. Many have led to competitive employment once, you know, our community is comfortable and they know and they see what we know, which is that people with disabilities have so many skills and abilities. And it's really been helpful for us not only to teach the people we're supporting, but to educate our community so that they open their doors and their hearts and they and really see how they can make a difference in so many lives for those that we're supporting.
For those that are hearing about this and recognizing that they have a loved one or someone that they know that might do well in the LEAP program, tell us a little bit about what the candidate and their family should expect when they first make contact with ABLIS, or they have some familiarity with your organization but none with the LEAP initiative. What's the process?
Well, they can call, as you said, or contact right on our website, Luis Velasquez, or he could also be reached at extension 154 at ABLIS. And there is an admissions committee. We have a process just to make sure that we have this, you know, the skills and expertise to work with each person. And many times we may not, and we have to create and develop our own skills depending on the needs of each individual. But they can expect that we are aware that not one size fits all. And, you know, we are not about programs. We're really about the outcomes for people. And they can expect that we will develop a plan to really meet the needs of their loved one and develop a really true goal that, that they can achieve to have success.
Well, without getting too specific in terms of individuals, can you kind of give us a composite of maybe what a number of the individuals that have been in the program quite a while have experienced and been able to do just to create a greater comfort level for folks that might be a little bit guarded about, sending their young person into a new environment like this, where a lot of times the degree to which the young person is excited to engage is proportionately, fixed in the trepidation of the parents or loved ones.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you that, you know, we've worked with some individuals, you know, are really dedicated, compassionate staff, helping a young adult maybe come in and volunteer over at the food bank, and it could be sorting and helping with inventory and setting up the area, and we help them to be comfortable, and they can make mistakes on our watch so that when they're ready for competitive employment, we kind of slowly transition them to our competitive employment staff, and we follow along to make sure that they are still comfortable and successful. We've created our own businesses through the years. We have an ABLIS Gardens and Gifts that we will actually soon be opening up in Darien, probably in the fall or in the winter. And that's it's a garden center. It is crafts and different things that are made by people with disabilities. And many of the individuals have come and worked in our store and, you know, worked with flowers. And then maybe after 6 months, they've transitioned to now working in a florist down the street.
Yeah.
So we make it so that individuals are comfortable to make mistakes. They are surrounded by people who will support them and help them to move on to the next step.
Right. Well, back a few weeks ago when the program went prime time, you had about 76 participants. Do you have a cap or a capacity situation there that will force you to limit the number of program participants?
Honestly, we know that this is best practice. It's best practice to be in your community and really be a part and an active member of your community. And we would probably just continue to expand and open up new places. We're not going. Once we see a need, our organization has really made the commitment to go beyond kind of what we're funded to do, but what the needs are in our community.
Great. Well, folks, if you feel that ABLIS has something to offer someone in your community through their LEAP program, I encourage you to get in touch with the organization. If you are someone listening who has a young person who might benefit from being part of the LEAP program, just give a call to Luis Velasquez at 203-531-1880. It's extension 154. Or you can just go to ableis.us, that's ABILIS.us, and look up the LEAP program to get more information, or peruse their website to find out about all of the opportunities that ABLIS has been providing for 70 years. This nonprofit organization supports more than 800 individuals with special needs and their families from birth throughout their lives. They're a leader in serving folks with special needs and from the special needs community in Fairfield County, Darien, Greenwich, New Canaan, Norwalk, Ridgefield, Stamford, Westport, Weston, and Wilton, and maybe soon in your hometown. We thank you, Amy Montemuro, CEO and president of ABLIS, again for your time this morning, and we can't wait to talk to you again to find out how this LEAP program has been growing between now and when we meet again. So thanks for joining us. Well, as we close out the program for this week, I got to say one of the best things about doing this job in journalism in Connecticut is getting to know people like my next guest, Dr. Katie Martin. She says, call her Katie, and I will, but I am bound to tell you that she is a PhD in nutrition science and nutrition science and policy, and she is the founder, Katie, is that right? Founder and CEO, basically, of Food Share Institute for Hunger and Research Solutions.
So I'm the executive director of the Institute, which is part of Food Share and Connecticut Food Bank.
Oh, okay. Just very recent guests with very big news. here on the show a couple weeks ago. Well, that's awesome that we're able to now, just a couple weeks later, bring your voice into this ongoing discussion that the award-winning For the People has been doing for beyond the 30 years I've been with the program. I'll tell you, our radio stations, nothing more, really prioritize folks who are food insecure and have done such an incredible job over the many years and the many stations in helping support communities, particularly families who are battling with hunger issues. So it's great to bring your voice in. According to the website, your institute develops innovative and evidence-based programs to promote health and long-term solutions to hunger. And you do some research on identifying what works, as well as providing training and services so others can implement best practices when the charitable within the charitable food network, I should say. Beyond that, I guess we want to start talking a little bit about the Fresh Place Food Pantry in Hartford, because it's a somewhat unique or at least highly successful model that maybe other communities back down here in the southern and central Connecticut listening areas might be able to look at as providing some ideas for doing better work down here. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, and thank you very much for having me on your show and for highlighting this important topic of food insecurity. Fresh Place is it's an innovative food pantry in Hartford, and I was privileged to be part of a group that over a decade ago when Fresh Place started in 2010, I helped to conduct a rigorous evaluation of the pantry. And Fresh Place is unique in that it offers client choice where guests can select their food with dignity like they're at a grocery store. Mm-hmm. And they work with a coach, a case manager, who helps them to identify the underlying reasons of why they're struggling with food insecurity and then helps to connect them to existing community programs, resources, services to help them build their self-sufficiency. And we conducted some really great research showing that people who went to Fresh Place had significant improvements compared to people who went to other traditional food pantries. And we've since scaled this program in additional food pantries in regional Hartford, in suburban Rhode Island, in El Paso, Texas, and there are other pantries that are interested.
Excellent. Well, as we have really jumped with both feet into the exploration of racial and social justice initiatives, this is playing a really important role in what is driving a lot of the health issues and sadly kind of strengthening a lot of the disparities between the haves and have-nots. Let's talk about pervasive food insecurity, because as we are learning and we'll continue to learn from you, it's not because we don't have enough food, right?
That's exactly right. In fact, as we've been scaling the Fresh Place program, we call the initiative More Than Food. And it's for that exact reason that we know, even though we've been providing charitable food in food pantries and food banks for decades, we know it takes more than food to end hunger. And I'm glad that you brought up the racial injustices, the systemic injustices that create and perpetuate food insecurity. And before COVID, but certainly COVID has raised our awareness of the groups that are most at risk for food insecurity, for losing their jobs, for becoming sick from COVID, and they're predominantly people of color, and in particular, women of color. So Black and Latina moms with children are at the highest risk. And that's not by their own fault. It's because of a lot of structural barriers and inequalities.
Well, that dealing with and addressing that issue is more than a week's worth of hour-long radio programs could possibly address. But it is great to hear that your initiative is being driven in great part to address these issues. Another important reason why we brought you on the show this morning, Katie, is because you've devised sort of a punch list of best practices that folks out there who either attend and are clients of or guests of food pantries and food banks can share with the folks who are supporting them, or individuals or volunteers who are associated with food pantries, large and small, whether it's the little pantry or closet in the church basement or the full-blown dedicated organization in various communities across the state. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've discovered in terms of actionable strategies for any food bank or pantry that they can implement to do better at addressing the root cause of the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really a passion of mine, this food insecurity in particular, but also the charitable food system of regional food banks and local food pantries. And I like the adage, when you've seen one food pantry, you've seen one food pantry. They're each kind of grassroots and started and developed in their own way. Yet, from my experience of visiting a lot of different food pantries and food banks around the country, there are best practices, and there are some evidence-based programs that are more effective at boosting food security, diet quality, self-efficacy, social support, et cetera. And I wanted to highlight this work, and I am pleased to say I just recently finished a book, and it's called Reinventing Food Banks and Pantries, New Tools to End Hunger. And like you mentioned, at the end of every chapter, I provide action steps that anyone volunteering at a food pantry or food bank can take to do this more holistic approach. And I'd like to say there's one key action step that everyone should take, but the reality is that hunger is complex, And it really depends on the role that you're playing, whether you're working at a food bank, if you're volunteering at a food pantry, or if you donate food periodically to a food pantry. There are different action steps that you can do to get involved.
So through your research and experience, you already know that some of these steps yield major and positive outcomes. What are a few of the things that you've seen that you can share that will give people the wherewithal and the energy to kind of step into some of these organizations and volunteer structures that in a lot of cases may have been in place and just sort of, kind of running on autopilot for a long, long time with the it ain't broke, so don't fix it mentality, when in fact, with just a few little tweaks and check boxes on your punch list from your book, they can really, without a lot of effort, create some really major positive changes.
Mm-hmm. I'll mention two in particular. So the first is client choice, which is when you design a food pantry so it looks more like a grocery store, and where you allow the customers or guests, as I typically call them, mm-hmm. To be able to choose and select their own food. Now, I know with COVID and public health precautions, a lot of client choice has gone out the window, and we have been pre-bagging food, sure. So there's less contact. Mm-hmm. But we can start really re-engaging with client choice. It is just absolutely a better way to provide charitable food for people in our community. And then the second point I'll make is that we know there's a ton of evidence showing that people who are food insecure and who go to visit food pantries are at high risk for chronic diseases such as type 2 diabetes, hypertension, obesity. And so we really want to focus on the nutritional quality of the food that we donate and that we provide within food pantry and food bank settings. And we have great tools. We have a stoplight system to be able to rank food nutritionally based on saturated fat, sodium, and added sugars that folks can use at the food bank level when ordering food, at the food pantry level, and also for even local community food drives to pay closer attention to the food that we donate to make sure that we don't do more harm than good.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you point out, when people have the opportunity to make the selection of good food, good healthy food, including more fruits and vegetables, they do make those positive choices and report significant improvements in their own feelings of self-sufficiency, right?
That's right. And we have, we've conducted research with food pantry clients and food insecure individuals and asked them what they most are looking for when they go to shop at a food pantry. And I can tell you it's predominantly fruits and vegetables and healthy food that are typically more expensive and harder to access when you have a limited budget. The things that they're not looking for, snacks, soda, candy, and I think a lot of it is it's a mindset of thinking differently about the issue of hunger. It is not just about filling hungry bellies and calories are calories. Yeah. That is just an outdated concept.
Right. Well, it has been wonderful to hear from you and meet you, Katie. Tell us how folks can find the book. Is it accessible out there on Amazon? Do they have to go through FoodShare? What's the way to get a hold of this resource?
Yeah, you can go right on Amazon. If you type in "reinventing food banks," it should pop right up. It's got a beautiful, colorful cover. Right. So you'll be able to find it there. You can also go to Island Press. That's my publisher. You can find it there. And locally, if you want to support an independent bookstore, you can go to hickorystickbookshop.com. They're located here in Connecticut.
And to find out more about the FoodShare Institute for Hunger Research and Solutions, you can visit our friends at FoodShare, who have just recently merged with the Connecticut Food Bank. Go to their website at foodshare.org. Our guest, Dr. Katie Martin, is the executive director of the Institute. We thank you for your time this morning, Katie. And best of luck. Appreciate all the great information today. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.